And there you have the news of the country and the planet. It often looks like it just can't get any stranger, can it? Hope your day is very good everywhere you're going. Don't look now. Holy cow, our Spectrum West is showing. Hi, everybody. Al Ross. Welcome to a first October 2018 program, and we are packed to the rafters with conversations featuring people involved with and immersed in the distinct culture of Western Wisconsin. Bruce Taylor stopped by the other day with a copy of his new volume of work called Poetry, Sex, Love, Music, Booze, and Death. We'll talk about making it happen and hear a passage or two. Nobu is in the house, as in the musical director of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. He has tasted the Pablo Pate and can't wait for more. He'll get more Saturday night as the symphony initiates its 44th season. Jim Oliver and Wayne Merrick discuss the art of presenting a classic like Our Town, which the Eau Claire Children's Theater is going to do very soon. And there are a couple of self-guided art tours this weekend. The Fresh Art Tour ambles through Pierce and Pepin counties. G. Chris, sculptor with a mission, is our tour guide and explains his particular aptitude. And it's also the weekend of the 15th Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour, which is where we begin this week. Our guest with The Stuff We Need to Know is Ann Manner, one of the happy inhabitants of Meadow Song Studio. I called her at the elementary school in which she teaches, and we talked just prior to her being overrun by third graders. Occupying the hot seat always allows guests to promote themselves, so please tell us about Meadow Song Studios and your artistic disciplines, favorites of which are pottery and photography.
I never took art in high school or college because I had an art teacher in elementary school that told me that I drew my trees wrong, took my paper away and made me start over, and I hated art.
Wow.
But I actually did art and taught it to people and my children, my children's friends, without really realizing it. And then I went back to school to be an art teacher. And at the same time, I recalled one pottery class that I took when I was getting my first degree. And I remembered I loved it, and I got a wheel. And pretty soon somebody asked me if I could teach them how to throw pots. So it's been going for about 10 or 11 years, slowly growing, but I don't advertise too much. I have a whole lot of things that I'm trying to do at the same time.
You do have a website, meadowsongstudios.com.
I also do photography because I've loved that my whole life. I do a lot for fun, but I also do weddings and senior portraits, newborn babies, and very fun.
What you see is what you get.
Well, not necessarily.
Well,
it's a little enhancement.
Now there is.
But.
Is that part of the fun of photography, is the ability to manipulate?
Yes, it is. It's not to change something into something it isn't, but just to make it the best it can be, and that's what I like.
On the phone with Ann Manner. She's an artist. She's also a teacher of art. She's a participant as well in the 15th Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour. It runs Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 6 Saturday, 10 to 5 on Sunday. Let's get into that quickly. 15 stops. You, I see on the brochure, are stop number 12.
Yep.
It involves 31 artists, and we don't have time to talk about them individually, but what's the best thing about the Falling Leaves Tour? You've been involved for a while.
The best thing about it is it's free. It's self-guided. You go to the ones that you are interested in or you're not sure, just follow the map. There are Google Maps that are new this year. If you have the Google app on your phone, you just look for it and download it. It's a way to see what art there is out there without having to buy any. And in a lot of cases, you can watch the artists make their art. And I guess the first time that I ever went on it as just a guest, I didn't realize we had that many artists around us. And it was amazing to me that we're all kind of out there insulated. And it's, I guess, just eye-opening to know that all that talent is around us.
Yeah, and it's not only the number of participants in each tour, but the amount of tours that are out there. It's amazing. No excuse for having nothing to do on weekends in the fall.
That's right. Absolutely.
The brochure is bright orange. I have one in front of me, and a line on it reads, "A backroads tour of art studios and stops hidden among the farms and woods near Fairchild, Augusta, and Fall Creek, Wisconsin." You get to meet the artists. There's new creations there. Because, again, you're in the hot seat, tell us where your studio is.
Near Fall Creek, we are 5 miles outside of Fall Creek on County Road D. You can also get there from Highway 27 on County Road D, just going the opposite direction. We do have myself and my daughter, who was in high school when we started on the tour. She is now a graphic designer in Minneapolis, but she is displaying some of her works. And we have jewelry artists. And every stop is very interesting, has a lot to look at, and treats, too.
Oh, cool. With 15 locations, I would think that most artistic media are represented.
There is a lot of everything. There are other potters, photographers, a lot of jewelry, printmaking. There is fiber arts, weavings and paintings and the things that people generally think of as art. There's a lot of that, too.
Sure. 31 artists, and 7 of those artists are new. So if you have done the Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour in the past and said, oh, I've already done that, why should I do it again? Here's a good example of why, because there's not only the ones you know and love out there, but there are 7 new ones. Again, it is Saturday and Sunday, 10 to 6 Saturday, 10 to 5 Sunday. If you want more information, the website is fallingleavesarttour.com. The orange brochures, I'm sure, are sprinkled all over our wonderful valley. How about signs, Ann?
Big signs that are the shape of leaves, and they're orange.
Okay.
And so there are small ones that show you where you need to turn, and then there are big ones at the end of each studio driveway.
Okay. Ann Manor, we'll call you back someday and talk more about what it is you do, because I love the bio that you sent. I love the fact that you have dogs and you have all that good stuff. So we'll do that someday. But thanks for bringing us up to speed on the Falling Leaves Art Studio Tour. Have a wonderful day.
Thank you very much.
We'll look at the Fresh Art Tour, another of the premier creative excursions that happens seasonally around these parts, a little further down Spectrum Street. But for now, here is news about some very important friends. Support for WPR comes from Simply Done in Downsville, a place for gifts, ideas, and space for events. Home of Dunn County Pottery, featuring wood-fired pottery and fair trade gifts. More at simply-dunn.com. Support also comes from Art Z Gallery in Amory. October features Bruce Kaupanger's Raku Pottery, Earl Duckett's Nature Photography, and Emily Gray Kohler's Woodblock Prints. More at artzgallery.org. Support also comes from Marquardt Toyota. The all-wheel drive RAV4, an SUV committed to reliability. Marquardt Toyota is located off Highway 53 between Eau Claire and Chippewa Falls, or MarquardtToyota.com. Here's a Spectrum memo for you. Hard Times, an Artistic Expression of Poverty in Eau Claire, features regional authors, musicians, and modern dancers. Wednesday, October 10th, 7 p.m., Jamf Theater, Pablo Center. It's free, but you're asked to register in advance. PabloCenter.org/events/178. Okay? Well, I have Bruce Taylor's book next to me, and I can see Nobu down the hall. But first, our old buddy Jim Oliver welcomes back a hardworking guest with a look at a timeless production being tackled by one of West Wisconsin's most active theater companies.
Our Town is a 1938 play by American playwright Thornton Wilder. It tells the story of the fictional American small town of Grover's Corners between 1901 and 1913 through the everyday lives of its citizens. Our Town was first performed in Princeton, New Jersey in 1938. It later went on to success in Broadway and won the Pulitzer Prize for Drama that same year. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will present Our Town beginning Thursday, October 11th. It will continue through Sunday, October 14th in the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. Joining us to talk about Our Town is Wayne Merrick, the founder and executive director of the Children's Theater and director of this production of Our Town. Well, thanks for coming in to talk to us.
Thank you.
I shared with you before we came on here that I have some experience with Our Town. My first time was when I was an 11th grader in high school in a small town in Minnesota, and we always did the junior class play, the senior class play, and it was always some puffy little piece of nothing that people could show off their ability to learn lines and not much else. And then that year, the senior class did Our Town. And despite the fact that virtually all of the actors had never been in a play before, it was just a wonderful show. And I was so impressed, and I've thought about it ever since. And then, 35 or so years ago, I had the opportunity to play the stage manager in a community theater production. I guess it's pretty hard to pin down specifically what the play is about, considering I've already given away what it's about, the everyday lives of the people of Grover's Corner, but give us a little bit of a flavor of the show anyway.
I think it's very interesting because, as we also were mentioning, I think many people have an experience with Our Town, whether it's having read it in their English class, having been in a high school production, having seen, you know, the movie versions of it or whatever. It's very interesting. This is a show we haven't done before, and actually it really hasn't been done in Eau Claire for quite a while, not by any of the community groups. So there were lots of reasons why we picked it. Obviously, there's a lot of anniversaries and firsts going on for us this year with our, you know, it's our 30th anniversary. It was the 10th anniversary of Dancing with the Eau Claire Stars. We're coming up on our first show at the Pablo Center, and this show is celebrating its 80th anniversary. So really, that was one of the reasons to put the show on the schedule, plus the Wisconsin tie-in with Thornton Wilder, of course. But the whole process has been very interesting because for a show that, like you said, is really just about the everyday lives of this town at the, you know, turn of the last century, it probably is the quintessential timeless classic. So it's been very interesting that even though it's, you know, 80 years old and it's set, you know, in a time period foreign to everybody, the themes and the people and their stories are still engaging. And you would think for a show that has really not very much action, there's a lot of dialogue, there's a lot of talking, you know, a lot of pantomime of props and things like that, it's still very engaging, even sitting through rehearsals for, you know, a number of weeks.
Mm-hmm. In the recent weeks and months, I've noticed that a lot of directors and actors I talk to talk about minimalism in the sets. Is that the case with your production of Our Town?
I mean, it is a quality of the show that it is to be done with virtually no set, minimal sets. You know, representative sets, you know, a trellis represents the door to a house, a table and chairs represents the entirety of the kitchen, even though the actress is preparing a full breakfast, you know, sink to cupboard to stove, you know, the only thing on stage is her table and chairs, the milkman delivering milk with a horse. It's just him out there. You could say the sound effects are certainly another character in the show because there are a number of sound effects that help to flesh that out. A horse whinnying, the train whistle, the school bell, the clinking of the milk bottles in a carrier. There are sound effects that help to maybe fill in some of that, but that really helps you to focus on, I think, the characters and the words without the distractions of the props and looking at the milk bottles, and there's obviously not going to be a horse on stage. But you can envision that horse, and you don't, after a while, you don't mind the fact that there's not a horse and there's not a stove, and they're walking through the trellis, and they're not pretending to open a door because there is no door on the set, but you understand what's going on because there are less distractions and you can focus on it, and you know what's going on. You don't need all of those extra pieces.
I read somewhere where Wilder wrote this to be set in the theater where it's being produced.
Correct.
Does that sound reasonable?
Yep.
And, and talk a little bit about the role of the stage manager and how the play progresses.
It is, I mean, it is written or set up to be almost a play within a play.
Mm-hmm.
You are coming to see a play, and the stage manager, you know, is there to help guide you through what's going on. So he starts the action. At different points, he interrupts the action. At the end of a scene, he thanks a couple of the performers,
mm-hmm.
and, you know, lets us know that, you know, we need to move on,
mm-hmm.
Sets the time. You know, it's now a couple hours later.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, like the sound effects and things like that helps us along. You're not floundering as you're sitting there watching this. You have this very solid, reassuring character that takes you on the journey of the show. And helps to narrate it and move you through. So he is talking right to the audience. I mean, there is no fourth wall. He clearly is talking to you, the audience members, whether it's today or, you know, back when it was first released or whatever. Mm-hmm. It is happening now.
Mm-hmm. We're talking to Wayne Merrick, who's director of the Eau Claire Children's Theater production of Our Town. Wilder called Our Town his favorite of all of his works, but he complained that it was rarely done right, insisting that it should be performed without sentimentality or ponderousness, simply, dryly, and sincerely. Would your production meet with his approval?
I guess that's for maybe the audience to judge. I fully agree with that assessment of it, and I know that that has been something that we are for sure striving towards. It is set in New Hampshire, you know, on purpose, because that neck of the woods or that part of the country, you know, is exactly where that quality comes from.
Mm-hmm.
There is no sense of sentimentality about it. It's very no nonsense. This is how it is. There's no sense of bitterness about it. There's no sense of, sentimentality. It is matter of fact. We can be okay with that.
Mm-hmm.
And so trying to make sure it's not, you know, it's not overacted. It's not this odd thing. And I agree. That's probably, you know, when you mentioned high school productions, I can see where there might be some problems with younger people playing adult roles, mm-hmm. without that breadth of experience, life experience.
Mm-hmm.
How can a 16-year-old understand what it's like to lose their daughter,
mm-hmm.
Or watch their son or daughter get married? So we're fortunate to have, you know, young people and adults in the show with a vast amount of experience. They have kids. They've watched their sons and daughters get married. They've lost parents.
Mm-hmm.
They have life experience to bring to the show, which I think helps to color it. And we have a stage manager that you couldn't really ask for somebody better than Mike Cook, who has, you know, so many years of experience, life experience and theatrical experience, to just bring that kind of no-sense calm to the show.
Well, you mentioned Mike Cook, who's the stage manager. Who are some of the other principal actors?
We actually, as far as some of our leads with, like, George and Emily, we have some young people that are theater graduates, but actually not from the area.
Mm-hmm.
They're both working at the theater now, strangely enough. One was an intern this summer from Pennsylvania.
Mm.
One is currently an intern from Georgia.
Mm.
So we have the benefit of some new faces on stage, with a theater background.
Mm-hmm.
Laura Robbins-Lease is one of the characters. And a lot of the characters is definitely an ensemble piece,
mm-hmm.
I put it that way.
Mm-hmm.
But you have the Webbs and the Gibbs families that are, you know, probably the larger parts. But I think it's really, you know, it's really the stage manager bringing it all together, and then just an ensemble of performers.
Mm-hmm. Well, can't let you get out of here without finding out what's what's going on at the Children's Theater. There's always something going on.
There is always something going on. We will be getting ready to perform Our Town very shortly. But in the meantime, our first musical of the season, Pinkalicious, still has some performances coming up. We just had auditions for Henry and Ramona, which comes up in November, followed by a new version of Cinderella, which will be our first show at in the RCU Theater at the Pablo Center.
Mm-hmm.
And then kind of sandwiched in between there, we're doing an encore run of the Rocky Horror Show bringing back the same cast from last year, which was successful. So that's coming up right around Halloween again.
Well, the play is one of the classics of American theater, Our Town by Thornton Wilder. The Eau Claire Children's Theater will stage Our Town October 11th to the 14th at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. For ticket information, go to www.ecct.org or call 715-839-8877. We've been talking to the director, Wayne Merrick. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
So there you go. That's what one of many fine theater companies is up to. And hey, I see Jim still here. He just might have a look at what else is transpiring at other playhouses. Take it away, Mr. Oliver.
Thanks, Al. Our Town, the classic play by Thornton Wilder, will be presented by the Eau Claire Children's Theater next Thursday through Sunday at the Oxford Theater in Eau Claire. The Menominee Theater Guild will present Dracula October 12th through the 14th and the 19th through the 21st in the Mabel Tainter Theater in Menominee. Pinkalicious will be staged by the Eau Claire Children's Theater Friday and Saturday at the Oxford Theater. The Heide Center for the Arts will stage Ole Runs for Office Friday and Saturday, October 12th and 13th. The St. Croix Art Barn of Osceola will stage Mother, Can I Please Stop Knitting? Saturday and Sunday. The St. Croix Off-Broadway Dinner Theater is staging same time next year, Fridays and Saturdays through October 27th. Little Women, a play based on the novel by Louisa May Alcott, will play Saturday and Sunday in the Franklin Square Black Box Theater in St. Croix Falls. The Festival Theater production will continue through October 27th. The Old Gem Theater of New Richmond is staging Johnny Appleseed for student audiences through October 19th. And the Clear Lake Community Theater will stage Night Came Early, October 12th to the 14th, and the 19th to the 21st in the Clear Lake Area Community Center. For Spectrum West, I'm Jim Oliver.
The Fresh Art Fall Tour is a three-day affair that begins Friday. It meanders through Pepin and Pierce counties with 17 stops along the way. One such stop with a great view is above the village of Nelson, Wisconsin, where Gary Christofferson, sometimes known as Chris, professionally known as G. Chris, sculptor with a mission, works and plays.
In the art world, most people know me as Chris, whatever is convenient. I gave it to a vote of 26 first graders who came in a bus to my studio. I asked them which they would prefer, Chris or Gary, and it was unanimous for Chris. I bow to my audience. But Al, thank you, by the way. This is very nice of you and Wisconsin Public Radio to do this, to give exposure to the Fresh Art Tour, which is a very good group of people.
You bet. Well, your bravery for being on the radio affords you the luxury of telling our audience about what you do in the artistic world. You're originally from Western Wisconsin. You then headed east for a different kind of life, actually painstaking government work, and now you are softening the effects of that existence with some more creative endeavors. I'm curious how, within all those nuts, bolts, and hoops, did you get into sculpting?
Well, actually, my former girlfriend and former wife was taking an art class, and the assignment she was facing was to create a Alexander Calder-type sculpture. Hmm. She was having some challenges with that, and she asked for help, so I said, okay, and so I helped her create a piece, and then we actually both did sculpture for a while, and then she finally said, I think I'll defer to you on this point, and then I kept going off and on over my whole career, sort of always a second career doing the sculpture work.
You like the word thrive.
Well, it combines together the sculpture with the whole sort of public policy work I still do, and the whole idea of thrive was really saying if we're really, really doing well, whether it's in the sculpture world or whether it's in the way we live our lives and our society, thrive is a pretty good term to use for what we would like to have happen.
That's right. Yeah, something to aspire to.
Correct.
I was telling another guest on this week's program how much I learn when I talk to people. When I was reading all about you, I came up with the word stabiles.
A term created by Alexander Calder as a way of describing his sculpture. Calder very much liked color and steel, and I've gone more with natural color and more using copper as a metal as opposed to steel as a metal.
They're very unique because they are meant to be interacted with, aren't they?
Oh, very much so. And that was something where Calder and I also took a different path. While he was very much a playful character and liked very much to do that with his sculpture. In my case, I really have always felt that the sculpture was done best when it was interacted with. And a matter of fact, a piece of sculpture that I donated to the Elma Public Schools, a large piece, it's sitting in a hallway, and the question came up, well, should students be able to interact with it? And the answer is absolutely. And in fact, they touch it all the time, and it leaves their fingerprints, and the oil from their fingerprints gets left on the copper and actually will endure for all of time.
Oh, wow. We're talking with a guy who goes by the artistic name of G. Chris. His name on his birth certificate is Gary Christofferson, but kids like to call him Chris. So there's three different ways we can talk to this guy. He's a featured artist in the Fresh Art Fall Tour, which is something we're going to get to now. This Friday, Saturday, Sunday, 10 to 5. Each day includes 17 studios and galleries in Pepin and Pierce counties. If you want more information, because we're not going to be able to name everybody and get all the details in on this particular discussion, go online to freshartour.org. So tell us, Chris, Gary, G. Chris, about the 20th annual Fresh Art Tour. You alluded to it a little earlier.
Well, I first went on it in 2014, and I was off for a couple of years and came back on again this year. And I've actually done the tour as well, which is the part that we artists normally don't get to do, which is to see what the other artists are now doing. But it's a great tour and very unique, traveling around the countryside, the Mississippi River Valley, the Chippewa River Valley, back in the valleys, up on the bluffs. What I always found unique is you actually get a chance to see the artists work where they create. So you get to actually see the process. You get to interact with the artists. You get to see what their studios and workshops are really like in there.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a very different experience than when you go to a traditional art gallery and you see the finished product, and that's pretty much it.
And you have 3 days to do it.
That's correct. In fact, to do the tour, it's hard to do it a day, even if you're very fast. If you really want to sort of enjoy it, you really want to take probably a couple of days, if you can, to do it and sit down, talk to the artists, see their environs. Each of these is very different when you look at where they work, the downtown and the villages, and then back in the valleys and up on the bluff sites like I am.
There's brochures and signage along the way.
Oh, absolutely. You can go to either the Facebook page for Fresh Art Tour or the website that you alluded to, Al, and there are maps there that you can print out and take with you, or pick it up off your smartphone when you're traveling. There's signage going to be up and down all the major roads. And then when you get close to a particular site, there'll be specific signage for each of the different sites. So, again, it's a self-guided tour, but there's a lot of help to make sure the tour goes well and you enjoy it.
And it's the 20th annual. When you've done something 19 years, you probably have it all down well.
Well, I think that's true, although every year is different because the artists change, the art changes there as well. Each of the artists try to add new features to make it also interesting beyond the new pieces of artwork that are going to be presented during the tour.
Thanks so much for being with us on Spectrum West and Wisconsin Public Radio, and have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you much, Al.
By the way, he donated some of the land he bought to the village that's now called Thrive Park. If you want more about Gary, you can go to gchris.com. Freshartour.org is the website for the whole tour. This is Spectrum West on WPR. One word will tell you who our next guest is, Nobu. He's the musical director and conductor of the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. He's not one of those finicky famous people who has to have only blue M&Ms and Perrier backstage. His only requirement for any concert is a couple bananas, which he brings along as a comfortable routine and a natural get-up-and-go for what's needed on the conducting podium. After a very successful appearance at the Pablo Center grand opening, the orchestra is set to begin its new and 44th season Saturday evening on the same stage. You conducted on the stage during the symphony's first performance at the Pablo Center. I thought I noticed a certain bounce in your step as you strode across the stage to the podium. Following the performance, it appeared as if the banana, which you always consume before an appearance, had definitely done its job. Mm-hmm. You appeared delighted. I know you dreamed about that occasion for many years.
Right.
So I'm asking, did that special evening live up to all those expectations you had?
Basically, 2 days before the concert, you know, the musicians and I walked into the hall, I mean, the stage, first time, because that was a dress rehearsal. And I kind of looked around, you know, into, you know, musicians' faces. I said, we are here now. Yep, we are here. We waited for this moment for a long time. We talked about it. Two summers ago, I remember that I was just still walking, you know, at Phoenix Park.
Sure.
So then, you know, there was nothing there. However, in my mind, okay, in 2 years, the building is standing here. And last year, last summer, I mean, it was already there, started building, you know, so I already, you know, saw this. Okay, next year, we will be in there performing.
Mm-hmm,
and this year, we were in there. We already performed.
Yeah. But you actually had physical dreams.
Yeah, I mean, I already conducted in a hall, I mean, in a new hall, probably 20 years ago. It was a little bit different color. In my mind, it was a more of a brownish stage and everything. Now it's turned out to be a blue.
Mm-hmm.
Somehow, you know, my vision was that not me conducting, but I was in the audience. Somehow I see myself an orchestra on stage.
Mm-hmm.
So that was my vision. I kept dreaming and then I kept in my mind, okay, it's going to happen, it's going to happen. Yeah, I mean, the power of positive thinking is amazing.
Yeah, so we have you to thank. Came about because you had that thought. Good.
No, it's not me, but
good for you.
Even me now, even conducting, it was my dream many, many years ago, and nobody even believed that, you know, I would be a conductor. I just somehow in my mind, I was always conducting, you know, suddenly became one.
I was happy for you when I was at that grand opening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because I could feel this.
Right.
I could feel your energy all the way back where I was sitting. Since this conversation is going to air first on Thursday morning, we should talk a bit about a special event that's coming up Thursday evening. It's the first annual fundraising gala. It features a special guest who's going to be in town for a few days. Who is that?
Rachel Barton Pine.
Okay.
She's just a fantastic violinist. She's from Chicago. Actually, she studied with the same teacher, a violin teacher, you know, as mine. She's much younger, of course. I met her when she was a high school student. I was already a graduate student, and then I was just stunned to to hear her playing Paganini, any pieces. And actually, she's going to also perform a Paganini violin concert on number one at the Saturday concert. Of course, you're talking about Thursday gala, but she's a guest speaker. This is going to be our kind of a kickoff event of the new era. From now on, the music scene is completely different. I also told already the musicians last week at the rehearsal, we celebrated our first performance. We did a good job, and also the audience really enjoyed it, and it was great. However, now the expectation from our community, from all our audience, is set really high.
I talked a little bit ago about you having this certain bounce in your step when you walked on stage on the grand opening night. Do you sense a new energy and a new psychology within your musicians in the symphony?
Yeah. I mean, I have been feeling this since last year because we knew.
Sure.
We knew it was coming.
Nobu's with us, musical director, conductor, Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. First of all, we hit on the gala, which is Thursday evening. If you're listening to Spectrum West on Thursday, it is at the Lismore in Richmond Hall. Lots of stuff, cocktail reception, dinner, keynote speaker, plus silent auction, live auction, and more. And then the concert coming up Saturday, the 6th, this Saturday. New Beginnings, 7:30 p.m. Your 44th season is called A Confluence of Artists. Now you have a special guest. The first one, does that mean you're going to have special guests throughout? It's a confluence of artists, or is this just the way to name it?
Right. I mean, confluence, actually, I kind of had a, you know, one thing in mind, community collaboration.
Okay.
Even for this first concert, you know, we are actually I'm inviting, you know, Rachel, you know, fantastic violinist, you know, so we have to have this kind of a special, you know, kind of a occasion. However, we are also performing Bernstein's part of the Candide, you know, the musical Candide.
Yes.
It's the ending final song. It's called Make Our Garden Grow. So then UWEC Opera Workshop will perform with us.
Yes. And so I was going to bring that up because opera is something that has not been on our entertainment plate very often in Eau Claire and around this area. How many people out of 10 would say they'd ever been to an opera? We don't see it as often.
Probably not many. But from now on, actually, you know, we try to even perform some operas, I mean, at the Pablo Center, because since we have a fantastic pit, orchestra pit, and then stage and everything, we can do anything. So then if I talk about the confluence, the December concert, we are actually Chippewa Valley Symphony perform with the jazz orchestra.
Yes.
We do.
You have fun with
it. It's gonna be fun. We know Chippewa Valley Symphony play the, you know, original classical, you know, piece, like Mozart Symphony No. 40. They do, I don't know how it goes. And then, I mean, the second half is actually we have lots of Nutcracker, you know, pieces. Again, with Beverly Symphony perform the original version, and then they're going to perform the jazz version. It's kind of a fun.
Yeah, and you're way ahead of me now. You're at the Christmas concert.
Right.
But that's the whole season is kind of a confluence.
Right, many things. I mean, at the end of the season, we're going to have lots of singers performing Carmina Burana. It's a May concert.
Yeah. In my notes, I called him Lenny Bernstein.
Oh, Lenny. Yeah, of course. Lenny. He was known as Lenny. Right.
You have some Gershwin, too.
Okay. I'm coming back to the October concert. Of course,
yes.
Of course, you know, this is more
which
important.
Which is just a few days away. So
right. Since you asked me about the confluence, so this whole season is a confluence.
Yeah.
However, okay, what is important is the October concert. Basically, you know, we put the program around the American scene, we call it. So first piece is Copland, Fanfare for the Common Man.
Okay.
Wow. I mean, to me, I don't know, you know, how he was able to just hit our face like, what is America? With few notes. Just pa-da-dee, pa-da-da. Mm-hmm. It's so America, isn't it?
We hear that a lot. That's cool.
I know, but it's amazing. So then we do Lenny Bernstein's Candide Overture.
Yes.
And also we perform the one of the, you know, the song from Candide, Make Our Garden Grow, with UWEC Opera Workshop. Then Gershwin, American in Paris. Right? You know
okay,
that?
Sure, yeah.
We have a taxi horns.
You do?
Yeah. And then Paganini, Violin Concerto, number one. And people, what do you mean American scene? No. We are featuring an American violinist.
Yes.
Fantastic American violinist.
Grew up in Chicago.
I think so, yeah.
But with a name like Pine, she sounds like she's from northern Wisconsin. You know,
I mean, this is America. I mean, so people came from your ancestors came from all over the place in the world, right?
That's true.
Wow, she's just fantastic violinist, incredible expression with solid technique.
Yeah.
So then the reason I chose to work Paganini Violin Concerto with her is that, of course, you know, she for her, you know, playing this incredibly difficult piece is a kind of piece of cake. But also this Paganini violin concert, it's like opera. It's a lot of, technically showy passage and also lots of singing, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's a really fun piece.
The season is called A Confluence of Artists. The concert coming up Saturday is called New Beginnings. It's at the Pablo Center at the Confluence. There's a word we're using a lot lately, confluence, which is good. It's a good word. It means people and things coming together. Nobu, thanks.
Thank you, Rim.
Saturday's concert begins at 7:30 p.m., and the website is cvsymphony.org. Spectrum West on Wisconsin Public Radio. Support for WPR comes from the Minnesota Marine Art Museum in Winona with Annie Haney Waterlines, featuring textured abstract paintings by the Minnesota-born visual artist. On view now, more at mmam.org. As a UW Eau Claire Professor Emeritus and past Eau Claire Poet Laureate, you might assume that using all those previous life descriptions means he has slowed his schedule and reduced his writing load. Wrong assumption. In fact, Bruce Taylor has just released a new book of poetry and will be reading from it Monday evening. Details will emerge in a conversation recorded earlier this week. Because there is a certain influence when surrounded daily by the energy and appetite of young people, all of which can rub off on those in close proximity. Who is Bruce Taylor, the writer, as he gets further and further removed from his role as teacher of young people in a university setting? Was your writing affected a little bit?
The thing I missed most immediately was the classroom.
Yeah.
I loved the classroom. So I really missed. I just dreamt for years still about teaching classes. And now I have dreams where I'm teaching, but I'm starting all over at a new place. I'm the age I am now, but I'm starting over somewhere new.
Because writers often write about who they are and how they feel and what they feel. Did your writing sort of change a bit as you got away from that influence I talked about?
Yeah, I think it has. A lot of writers will talk about how they couldn't imagine teaching and being a writer because of the time drain and the energy. I couldn't imagine any other way. Mm. You know, one fed the other. I tried to bring what was in my writing into the classroom and then bring the classroom into my writing. So I would miss that, I think, even more, but I've been fortunate enough to be doing a lot of community work now.
Okay.
So I'm still plugged into a lot of writers, have a lot of activities that put me in contact with them.
You have a lot more time.
Oh, I mean, yeah.
When you got home at the end of a day, a teaching day, there was less time to sit down and write.
Now I wake up every morning. I always say it's like being a surfer waiting for a wave. I pour my coffee and I sit there and see what's going to happen today.
Okay.
And when it happens, I just go with it. It might be a half hour, might be 4 hours,
okay.
But I have the time where I can just do it.
I'm going to jump ahead then, because that's one thing I was curious about, whether or not you write or at least take notes every day, because I remember a few years ago you gave me a list called Write Something.
Mm-hmm.
It was designed for students originally. I started counting. I quit because there's got to be at least a million ways to practice the craft. So I was going to say, do you practice what you preach?
Yes, okay. Absolutely. You know, it's like when you've been at something a long time, you don't have to do it quite as intentionally.
Mm.
I mean, when I sit down, I feel I'm where I should be. But yeah, absolutely every day. People would never think that they can be a musician without practicing or that they can be an athlete without training. But people think, hey, I got a pen and a piece of paper. I can be a writer.
I usually ask writers how they know it's time for another book. The accumulation of material, because it's piling up, the quality of that accumulation. Do you have a pattern of releasing books that you like to adhere to?
What? Not particularly. Well, I do have sort of a pattern, but the impetus for this book is, for about the last 30 years anyway, about half of the stuff that I've been doing ended up in traditional forms. Poetry, traditional forms, rhythms, rhymes, sonnets, sestinas, villanelles, things like that. When I was younger, I said, along with my other young poet friends, the sonnet is where old poets go to die.
Mm-hmm.
And what I didn't know I meant at the time was I wasn't good enough to do one. You know, I had to learn my chops. And, you know, it's really easy to write bad formal poetry. It's really hard to do it well.
Why don't we take a break and you read something
short
from the book, and then we'll get back into our discussion. The book is called Poetry, Sex, Love, Music, Booze, and Death. It's a new book. Bruce Taylor is with us, and here he is.
Since these are all forms, I'm going to start with probably the most basic kind of form there is. The rhythms in this poem are almost perfect. Now, no poem has a perfect rhythm. No good one. Very few good ones. Stopping by woods and snowy evening. Yeah, okay. You know, there's some that just are right on the money. And then the rhymes are what we call true rhymes, like moon, June, croon, spoon.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those are considered to be sort of crass. You know, you want something else. You want moon and jejun, you know. You want slant and eye rhymes and those kinds of things. But this one is about as conservative as forms get.
Okay.
It's called The Guys at the Bar. A salesman on a lucky roll, his profit is your loss. The dentist on a weekend prowl, his pockets full of floss. The gravedigger out for a laugh, the shrink for a shoulder to cry on. The plumbers on time and a half, the bankers who never will buy one. The painters who knocked off early today and may tomorrow too. The guys who had it made nearly, and the guys who don't know it but do. The little guys on the tall stools, the fat guys bellied up to the bar, the young guys trying to be so cool, and the old guys so sure that they are.
That's a comfortable poem.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds because of the rhythm that you talked about.
Yeah, well, you know, the people have said forever that particularly Americans, they want melody in their music, rhyme and rhythm in their poetry. They want realistic representation in their art. You know, most people are comfortable. And even today, you know, you run into this. I run into it all the time. People say, well, yeah, but it doesn't rhyme.
Yeah,
how can it be poetry?
Sure,
it just has to be.
Well, we seem to like symmetry.
Yeah, sure. You know, there's so many pleasures in the form for the writer and the reader. And that's one of them. Someone said when they finished a good formal poem, I think they were talking about a sonnet, and you get to the very last line, it's like the click of a perfectly made wooden box.
Oh,
you
sure.
know, it fits together.
Cool.
And then when you're doing a form, there's a game element to it for both the poet and the reader. You know, can I do this? Then there's, you know, the trick element. How did you do that? You know, did you have something up your sleeve? And then there's what I like to call the gymnastics element, too. You're just showing off.
Mm.
And you want to stick the landing. You know?
There you go. I spoke of quality in a question I had, quality of material, a moment ago. And thus, the question, does a poet come to a place where you are seasoned enough that most everything you produce is quality? Or do you still struggle at times to get it right?
Well, you never know. You don't. Because you can fool yourself.
You don't. Oh, yeah.
You know, you can do something and say, huh, that's pretty damn good. 3 days later, look at it and it's like, what the hell was I thinking? That never goes away. I'm not sure it's supposed to go away. That's somebody else's job. Mine is to make it the best I can be, to do the best I can, to make the most beautiful, interesting thing I can. And it's somebody else's to decide if it's going to be good or bad. And they will. You know, they will.
I always tell people and admit during chats with so many of the wonderful people that are guests on Spectrum West how often I learn something. In this case, I don't know whether to go back and ask high school and my brief college experience teachers whether they fell flat on their face or whether I just wasn't listening. But when you brought up sestina, I had no idea what a sestina was. I looked it up, and I have the explanation here.
We would be a little worried about you.
Really?
If I knew what one was?
Okay. Good.
Yeah, because that's not a word that's familiar to, you know, that's very much an insider's, poet's, English major.
Because it's a combination, you know, when you look up the definition, it's a combination of literature and mathematics.
Yeah, sure.
Because it has to do with sixes all and triplets, and it's crazy.
They call the sestina the devil's form because you have to make a deal with the devil to get one done.
Online, there were a bunch of examples of it. Boy, you have to work to do this.
Yeah, yeah. I don't even know that I would attempt a sestina when I was a young poet. I started messing with it and always took it, again, as a challenge, a game, a puzzle, you know. But I'll tell you what now, if the possibility of a sestina raises itself, I start to run. It's too hard. It takes too long. I'm not going to live that long. Yeah. It's just, you know, sometimes you can't resist it, but I don't go at it as eagerly. Uh-huh. With a sestina, now other forms are different.
I encourage our listeners to look it up. It's S-E-S-T-I-N-A. Yeah. In your days of not having as much to do, let's say you're retired and you're getting tired of Sudokus or whatever those
puzzles.
Are called. Yeah.
Yeah.
Get into some
sure,
sestinas.
You want to keep the brain cells burning.
Yeah.
This will do it for you.
Why not?
Yeah. Well, you know, sestinas, when I read next Monday, what I'm going to do is concentrate on two major forms, and sestinas would be one of them. And so I'll be reading four or five or six and talk about the various ways to approach a sestina.
Mm-hmm.
And a sestina is an excellent example of the two most important things about formal poetry.
Mm-hmm.
One, there are rules. Two, everyone breaks them. The form is only as good as if you can challenge it. Or modify it, or push the envelope, you know.
Do you have another shorty that you can share?
I sure can.
Coming up on Monday, October 8th, Bruce is going to be reading from his new book, Poetry, Sex, Love, Music, Booze, and Death, 5 p.m. That's at the local store.
Well, those are six words from one of the sestinas.
I should have known, being six things, that it had to do with a sestina. Every time I hear the word six now, does six-pack have to do with
sestina? Yes, it does, yeah. Yep.
So go ahead. You're on.
Okay. Unlike the sestina, which is ponderous and it's like a Roman legion, it just keeps marching at you. And the sestina tends to deal with big, huge, monstrous issues. Well, you look at the words, poetry, sex, love, music, booze, and death. I mean, those are big words, you know.
Yes.
I love it, you know, when I announced that this was the book and this was the title, I had some friends come back and one said, well, yeah, but what's the book about? So unlike the sestina, another form that I have a lot of in here are sonnets, particularly Shakespearean sonnets, more familiar to people, the idea of a sonnet anyway. You know, if the sestina is like Joe Frazier, just to stand there and slug it out, the sonnet is sort of like Muhammad Ali. It floats like a butterfly. It's light. It's shifty. It's always made up of at least three separate moves. Because it's shifty and it's complex, it tends to lend itself to those subjects that particularly are mixed up on our heads, sex, love, romance, death, mortality, all that kind of stuff, you know?
I like the way you build things up because now I can't wait.
Yeah. So this one is called How I Do and Do Not Want to Go. A heart attack while on Viagra, first of all my friends, or last, from shingles or pellagra or anything involving fast cars, slow poison, or swordplay. Perhaps in my sleep, or at my leisure, but not on a Friday or Saturday and miss the weekend's simple pleasure. Or on some festive major holiday and spoil it for my kids forever. But with a dime left in my 401k and owing everyone I know a favor. Writing in health at a very old age, a love poem on a freshly turned page. Now that's... I think is... okay.
That was very...
And,
wonderful.
You know, it's playful, wonderful. Too. You know, you're sort of making fun of rhyme in that case, teasing yourself.
Making fun with rhyme.
Yeah, yes. Yeah, absolutely.
The book is called Poetry, Sex, Love, Music, Booze, and Death.
I think they'll be available on Amazon by tonight. I'm going to take them down to the local store.
And this will air on Thursday, so by Thursday it's going to be
everywhere.
They're going to be on street corners.
Well, a couple of bars.
All right.
I have a couple of bars that have been gracious enough to carry my stuff.
And I will know those bars. If I walk into them and the bar is quiet, I'll know your book is there because everyone is reading.
I was going to say, they don't sell too many, but some people will read them when they get nothing else to do.
Bruce Taylor, pleasure.
Thank you, sir.
Monday, late afternoon, 5 o'clock at the local store, downtown Eau Claire. Bruce Taylor reading from his new volume of Wordsmithing. Hey, support for WPR comes from the Chippewa Valley Symphony Orchestra. Guest violinist Rachel Barton Pine joins the orchestra for its New Beginnings concert Saturday, October 6th in the Pablo Center at the Confluence. Tickets at pablocenter.org. Dive into some more Spectrum memos for you. Thursday, October 11th, the Flambeau Valley Arts Association features the Kishore Marionettes at 7:30 p.m. Watch the videos. It's amazing. Kishore, that's C-A-S-H-O-R-E, marionettes.com. Saturday at the Mabel Tainter, The Covers, a premier Twin Cities dance band, 8 p.m. Thursday, October 25th, the Mabel Laughs featuring Aaron Jackson, 7:30 p.m., mabeltainter.org. The Master Singers initiate their 2018-2019 season with America My Home 2018 Flight Song. Sunday, October 14th, 3 p.m. at the Pablo Center. Tickets at the Pablo Center box office and online pablocenter.org. Next week, who knows where I'll be. One more break and then we'll dive back in on October 18th. In the meantime, thanks to Rachel, Kate, and Dean. This week's guests, thank you as well. And thank you guys for listening in on our party line. I hope you find it enlightening. For Jim Oliver, I'm Al Ross. Bye now.